Okay, for topic five, after lunch, we've got Phil addressing the stigma and scepticism that wargaming attract. Phil is, however, going to be whispering. He has the microphone, so if we could just make sure we keep the background noise to a minimum, we'll be able to get, hear what he's saying. Over to you, Phil.
Walking. there's plenty of people who are in that very uncomfortable situation, including actually children themselves. The last thing they want to do is to appear childish, playing games and so on. There's also something more sinister. There's the nerdish dimension, but also the closet Nazi dimension. Mm. Have a look at that book if you haven't seen it already, by Smeltzer and Davis. What they're basically arguing there is a lot of war gamers are closet Nazis. If you look at the number of war games and the way they're portrayed about the Eastern Front of World War II, you can see they've got something in their argument. Okay. So there's an image problem. And that's, of course, part of this broader recreational dimension. Now, that again is a theme that's run throughout the conference, starting with a rather awkward way in which Graham referred to it at the start, awkward not in the way that he said it, but in terms of how does one include as well as the recreational dimension, as well as saying that that's not currently the focus of our activities. We have this love-hate relationship between the two sides of the activity, the professional side and the recreational side. I personally think that the recreational side is enormously useful. I think it would be far, far poorer without it. I think it's very telling that most of the wargamers here, professional wargamers, are also, as we've heard, recreational. Indeed, many of us would not be professional wargamers were we not in origin and still recreational wargamers. I think that the body of material that's produced by the hobby is an enormous asset. Others disagree. Others see that there's less crossover between the two worlds. What I think is undeniable is that there's a liability associated with the fact that so many people play wargames for fun. People don't do operational analysis for fun. Some do. They're really weird. People don't do game theory for fun. People do war games for fun. That's a liability, I think, partly because the image is, as you can see here, with figure war gaming or with computer games like Rome Total War, one that seems to emphasize the fun rather than any kind of serious attempt at analysis. But also because we implicitly, I think, are suspected of only pushing wargaming because we want to live our hobby. We want to do our hobby at work as well as in our spare time. So I think there's this implicit concern that we have a hidden agenda, and that were we not recreational wargamers as well, we might not be so one-sided perhaps, or evangelist in our views. Recreational wargaming is an entertainment, like Hollywood. The purposes of entertainment are not to simulate in order to get a better understanding of reality, unless the customers want it, which many of them do. There is an entertainment angle which often trumps the simulation angle, especially in the most visible kinds of games, which are the recreational games which are available in public. Here's a couple of examples. On the left there, supposed simulation of the Battle of Granicus, which is an utter, complete joke with no research whatsoever, and yet it's sold and it's played because it can be played as a game. On the right, something that was produced as an introductory game. It's a tremendous lost opportunity. This actually is a board game, but it includes a computer version where the rules are programmed into the computer. Brilliant, that's exactly what you need to get youngsters in and to allow them to see how the rules work without interpreting them for themselves, except they've made terrible mistakes and distortions in the game, partly for dramatic purposes. It's on the Tunisian campaign, Rommel and Patton are present almost throughout so that they can fight one another. They overlapped in reality by about 2 days in command, out of the months. Okay. So there is this problem that the primary driver of design in the recreational area is not necessarily simulation. It may be, but it may not. And that gives us a penalty. Again, we've talked about this earlier. Graham in particular has, I think, identified this as a real central liability, the luck of the dice. This is from my book. I characterize war games as always somewhere within this triangle. A blend of reality, which would be a history book, a pure skill contest, which would be like a game of chess, or a pure game of chance, like Snakes and Ladders. War games, almost all war games, have elements of those three. The one that's the biggest liability is the chance, it's the Snakes and Ladders, it's the roll of the die. Why is that the case? I think it's not difficult to understand. that what real war is not like a game of chess. It is like a game of cards or whatever with chance involved. So we put chance in as a simulation element. But in the real world, when something goes to pot, A, you can't deny it's happened, and B, you can see precisely why in hindsight. When it's because you roll a one on a die, neither of those apply. It's seen as illegitimate and improperly explained. Die roll is simple, but it doesn't have the buy-in, especially when you're on the losing side of that die roll. So this is a big problem. I showed you this yesterday. And the way that war games explore the hypotheses, the hypothetical, the variability, rather than the single historical case. The trouble is, unlike simulations which you can press a button and run for a million times and generate the whole of these graphs to see exactly what the distribution is, war games are difficult and costly and time consuming to run over and over again. So if you only play it once or twice, you are not sure how representative it is. You really need to play it a lot more times to get the full confidence in the findings, the decisional variation and the chance variation, and we don't have time to do it because these things are played by players, not by artificial intelligence on a computer. So in some way, the lack of easy iteration, repetition of games gives them a certain illegitimacy compared to a simulation which you can run a thousand times because it's all automatic. Skeptics are asked to articulate why they don't think much of war games. The main thing that they highlight is questionable assumptions. You know, war game assumes X, Y, and Z. Who says, where's your evidence? I disagree, and therefore the whole thing falls down. Garbage in, garbage out. Okay. I try in my Lost Battles book to create a comparative model of dozens of ancient battles and to try and get over some of those problems about assumptions by saying, well, we know a lot about the battles as a whole. Still, critics, and there are plenty of them, will say, oh, I just don't agree with your assumptions about X or Y. Okay. That's all the more true of the typical recreational game. On the right there, you have what might have in theory have a wonderful potential for use in professional contexts. It's a game about Lebanon. It includes a scenario for Lebanon 2006. It's based on a fire and movement system, as they call it, which is now applied to dozens of games. That's the good news. The bad news is the system, in my judgment, is utter crap. It doesn't give us any kind of a reflection of real military dynamics. Okay? It's good for games. People might enjoy to play it as a game, but it has really no validity in professional terms. So there are big problems about the assumptions underlying games, especially recreational ones. There's the perennial trade-off between accuracy and simplicity. Doesn't just apply to war games, applies to pretty much everything. That's Frederick Lanchester, and the graph shows a graphical representation of his square law, basically. If you can defeat the enemy in detail by halving their force and fighting each one in turn, you'll be able to destroy them and only lose 30% of your own forces. It doesn't take much, and the analysts, of course, here will know this very well, to see that there are tremendous problems about the simplistic assumptions, very unrealistic assumptions, which Lanchester eyes even less slipshod. There's a debate to be had about that, whether that would be a good thing or a bad thing, whether one could actually say, these designers are good, these design principles are good, the rest is beyond the pale, and don't have the trademark. I don't think that'd be a good idea myself. But the point is, wargaming is an art, not a science, and that has liabilities. Wargaming in some ways is more like painting a picture than it is about crunching the numbers, even though it involves mathematics rather than paints. When you get to historical gaming, well, you could argue that there could be a degree of legitimacy because at least we're modelling something that we've seen and we can test our model against the observed result. You run into the problem that even asking counterfactual questions, what if, is a big issue of debate within the scholarly community. There are those, and you see on the left there, my colleague Ned LeBeau just joined us at King's a year ago, a wonderful book about the theory and the do's and don'ts of counterfactual analysis. There are plenty of skeptics who say it's silly to ask what if. E.P. Thompson, for example, described it as unhistorical shit. There are plenty of others. And so, if it's not legitimate even to ask what if, going beyond that to play a war game in which what if is the primary dynamic, it's not going to be seen as appropriate. And you see on the right some of the fairly popular books, especially about World War II, which have appeared in this counterfactual vein, and which are often seen as not that serious. About three circles this morning, and there are the three circles: the academic, the military, and the enthusiast. And I've tried to situate within that Venn diagram the various ways in which one can approach the study of war. And you'll see that things like operational analysis, for example, game theory certainly fit squarely within the academic circle, perhaps as well as others. War studies unites us all. War gaming almost exclusively an enthusiast and a military and broader defence analyst activity. There's very little representation of wargaming within the academic circle. Now, it depends how you define wargaming. And of course, the kind of thing that Rex does, which he described for us this morning, is much more acceptable within social science, within political science. But hard wargaming of conflicts, the kind that I do, I'm one of the very, very few people who's going to do it. So there is this lack of academic theory, lack of academic respectability, which you find with regard to operational analysis, game theory, even now, counterfactual analysis. You can read scholarly articles pro and against. You can't find them about wargaming because it's outside the pale, and that contributes to this lack of legitimacy, I think. And the final slide, what that produces is pervasive scholarly skepticism. The military think they have it bad. I assure you it's 1,000 times worse if you're trying to do hard, kinetic wargaming at least, particularly historical wargaming within the academic community. Most of the time it's just been ignored. I've tried in the books that you see there to change that. And it's interesting the reactions I've had to that over the past several years. For the most part, that reaction has been completely to ignore it. The books have succeeded extremely well. They've sold well. We have discussion groups online which have thousands and thousands of postings and hundreds of members. So they really have produced a tremendous reaction. Very, very few of those, none, but very few, have been from scholars. So the primary response has been, ignore this, perhaps this strange guy will go away. When a response has been provoked, it's tended to be very significantly skeptical. I'll just finish with two examples. We produced the book Lost Battles at the same time as that was coming out, and that's about ancient land battles. We put together a grant proposal, a grant application, to do the same thing, essentially, or similar thing, for ancient naval battles, with the very significant twist that we were going to use the data, the hard mathematical data, performance data that had been obtained in the 1980s from the reconstruction of a trident, which you may remember, by the Hellenic Navy. Probably all they could afford if they were But anyway, acceleration, turning circles, all of this. And you can see how with computer simulation, you could multiply that out. You could have virtual driving battles, etc., etc. Okay? But of course, a grant application, you put it in, it gets refereed. And one of the referees was absolutely damning. And basically, his line was, but this is just war gaming. Okay? That's the first example. Second example, the other thing which you have to put up with now in Britain is research assessment. So every 6 years or so, our research has to go forward to assesses outside panels. And it's a second guessing exercise because we need to choose what we're going to put forward in advance, trying to think what they will like and what they won't like. We were worried about how my work, my simulation work, like my book, would be received. So we sent it out to academics to get some judgment. I've been banging on for a few years in my appraisal reports every year to my head of department, saying, I'm worried about the stigma of this. You know, I'm happy with it, but I'm worried what other scholars might think. And he was saying, no, I'm sure it's not that bad, it's fine. I haven't seen the reports that came back on my book and article about simulation, but I do know that my head of department said to me, I didn't think you were telling the truth about that. Now I know it's worse than you thought. So, there is a long list of problems, long list of reasons for the stigma. There it is for your reference. You can probably add to it yourselves. What I'd like you to do now, Tom, Jeremy, is to brainstorm. Is there anything beyond what we talked about with the military section this morning that we can do about it?